flowers from my favourite florist arrived. It was an arrangement she'd bought me before, when we'd been together on more than one occasion. Previously, she said she hated buying and receiving flowers, that they were a complete waste of money, she thought. But she knew how much I adored the gesture of fresh florals, and she'd learnt over time that it was an act I cherished. She'd also sent me an expensive bottle of champagne, another sentimental gift, as it was one we'd often enjoyed on the couch together. But it was the sentiment behind the bigger gift, which arrived later that day, that ripped my heart out and drove over it with a monster truck. It wasn't the kind of present you get your ex, the girl you hadn't spoken to in 6 weeks. It was the kind of gift you buy your girlfriend, something so personal that speaks to who you are as a couple, as a unit. I get packages all the time, deliveries, work, online shopping orders, whatever. But as soon as I saw this package sitting on my doorstep, noting its size, I intuitively knew exactly who it was from. Gingerly, almost afraid of what I'd find, I peeled back the packing tape, opening the box to reveal a beautiful vintage record player, something I'd mentioned months ago I wanted, and a Lewis Capaldi record. Instantly, I was transported back to that night we spent together at his concert at the start of the year, easily the best night of our entire relationship, our happiest time spent together. A part of me died inside as I carefully lifted the vinyl out of the box. Half of my heart was singing. This was the most thoughtful present I could have ever imagined. But the other half was broken because I couldn't share it with her. You have to understand that we hadn't been in any contact for weeks at this point. And whilst I believe her intentions were sincere and she was genuinely trying to do something to make me happy, the sentimental gift was a double-edged sword and a painful reminder of what I no longer had. I wanted to call her up to ask her why she would take me back to the best night of my life with her when she couldn't be there with me and I couldn't be with her. But I didn't call her. I simply sent a text. A very restrained, emotional-free text. I didn't want to scare her by telling her how I really felt. "Thank you so much for your present. It was so beautiful," I wrote. "Looking forward to spending the night with my kids tonight." In my head, I added, "I love you. I miss you. Why did you do this?" "Hey, hope you've had a great day. You deserve it," came her reply. I was left so awfully confused once again. She didn't seem to want to have anything to do with me. Yet she'd gone to the effort of sending such a sentimental gift, one that showed she was still thinking about me. That present was proof I was on her mind. No, 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 no. Was this true love? I don't think I'll ever know. We were each other's potion and we were constantly drunk on euphoria. But her love was always guided by rational thought and pure logic, while mine was driven by a belief in a romantic fairy tale, hopeful that, throughout untold hardships, our soul's connection would always see us through. I completely acknowledge my part and take responsibility for willingly returning to a situation over and over that perhaps I shouldn't have, stripping myself bare of any remaining self-worth each time. I can't and I will not blame her entirely. And I will never disrespect the many good parts of our relationship. I was 5 years older than her, and my emotional maturity should have held me back on many occasions. I lived on edge the entire relationship, and I never relaxed into it or felt at ease. Relationships can be like that, though. Just because a romance goes badly does not mean either party is a bad person, nor does it say anything about your worth or what you deserve. Deep down, I know she is a beautiful person, but I continually ignored the red flags in our relationship. My heart still holds love and respect for her, however, because I truly believe she wasn't aware how deeply I had fallen. While it didn't make it any less painful at the time, I know she would never have caused me pain or hurt on purpose. After my birthday, though, things only got worse. Chapter 21. For the whole month of September 2020, I was taking part in a charity running event called Connor's Run, which raises money to help young people with brain cancer. I pledged to run 125 kilometres in the month, raising money for one of my best mate's nieces who had devastatingly lost her battle to brain cancer at just 5 years of age. On average, I needed to do about 4 to 5 kilometres a day to hit my goal, but some days, days when I needed more of an escape, I'd smash out more like 8 kilometres in a day, which was pretty huge considering I'd never really run in my life. On the outside, I appeared strong, fit, and the people around me were telling me I looked incredible. They weren't wrong. My body had dramatically transformed since I started running. But it was behind closed doors that the transformation really occurred. I'd never been unhealthier in my life. I was running publicly for charity and posting about it every day in order to raise funds. But what nobody saw was a frail, depressed woman who wasn't eating, who couldn't sleep for days on end, someone who was sitting and smoking cigarette after cigarette after cigarette before and after those daily runs. I'd lost 10 kilos in 2 weeks because I just couldn't eat. My anxiety was so rife and had become so overwhelming that I completely lost any feelings of hunger. Day in, day out, I was just drinking and smoking. Looking back, I don't know how my body survived that period of time. Everyone on the outside would tell me that I was thriving, not knowing I felt I was barely clinging to life. The running itself was good for my mental health, even though every run I did, I was thinking about her. It was therapy for me, listening to music, my feet pounding on the concrete path, just trying to get through it, to make it to the end of each session. The pain I was feeling meant I went further. It was almost like I was punishing myself for being in this position. I felt like a fraud, running to fund research into kids' brain cancer. Meanwhile, I would immediately celebrate the end of every run with a cigarette. My skin was dull, my eyes hazy, my brain full of fog. I'd never been so unhappy. I realised I was no longer experiencing heartbreak. I was experiencing grief, as if someone I loved had died, gone in an instant, never to return. And there was nothing I could do about it. The reality, of course, was that I was dealing with the metaphorical death of someone who was still very much alive, but was no longer in my life. People were still asking me how she was going, if she was enjoying the new club. I have no idea, I'd tell them, my voice devoid of any emotion. Wait, you guys don't speak anymore? That question was a dagger to my heart. Every single time. The issue wasn't that I was no longer her girlfriend. I hadn't known if I could commit to that. It was the fact that someone I loved so much, who I'd spent so much time with, close to a year by that stage, back and forth, and shared such huge emotions with, seemed to be doing fine now that we were apart. In the past, we had always come back to each other. Always. No matter what, we knew we had always loved each other. And now I was trying to accept this person being on the other side of the world and us maybe never seeing each other ever again. 2 weeks after my birthday, as I sat looking at the record player she'd sent, the extravagant bunch of flowers now wilted, I should have thrown them away long ago. It all became too much. I felt like I was going legitimately crazy. I had to reach out. I had to know if she was struggling too. Just a quick message to check in. That couldn't hurt, right? I am missing you so much, but I hope you're well, I typed. Nothing. Nothing for 2 days. and when the reply came in, it felt as if it was from a stranger. She simply thanked me for my message, told me she was well, hoped that I was too. Her response was calm and measured, and something snapped in me. Is she fucking serious? I let loose. What is wrong with you? I typed furiously on my phone. How can you be okay? I am struggling. I am reaching out for help. You promised you'd always be there to support me. How can you do this to me? I didn't wait for a response before I sent another text. I am struggling. I miss you, and you're sending me some robotic answer? How are you so fucking okay with all of this? The three little dots terrorized me as she composed a message back. The wait was agonizing. I think it's best if you don't contact me again. Thanks. My heart dropped into my stomach and the world around me spun. I called, no answer. I called again, straight to voicemail. She was declining my calls. I kept calling and calling, relentlessly trying to make her listen to me, to acknowledge my existence, screaming into the phone as I left her a voicemail. I was out on a walk, the 1 hour I was allowed out of the house a day in lockdown, and people stared as I stalked along in a frenzy, shouting obscenities into the phone. I was set off and I was scared. Unrestrainable, hallucinating, muscles trembling out of my control. It was absolutely horrific. I walked and walked until I felt like all the life had been sucked out of me. I sat on a park bench in the rain, completely numb to my surroundings, like a scene out of a movie. I recall taking a photo of myself in that moment of absolute rock bottom, not wanting to ever allow myself to forget how painful this moment felt. What am I going to do? Utterly defeated. I'd never been here before. It was a physical pain, this burning, searing hurt inside my chest, and I needed to release it somehow, to shift it from inside of me. This is why people kill themselves. This feeling, right here. I didn't think then that I wanted to take my own life. But in that moment, I could understand why someone would. How it might seem an appealing option to simply not feel pain anymore. My logic had also been numbed by my emotional state, and all I wanted was to ease my emotional torment. Somehow, in the haze, I'd found my way back to my car. I climbed in, sat at the steering wheel, and started the engine, the torrential rain pouring down around me in the now dark night as I pulled out into the street. By this point, I did want to die. I knew I didn't want to be here anymore. But my babies, they don't deserve this. In such an intense moment, I settled on the fact that I just wanted to feel pain somewhere other than my chest. I wanted to hurt myself so badly on the outside, just so that I stopped feeling this agony inside of me. The pain of breaking my leg, that will distract me from what I'm feeling. It's raining, so it will seem like an accident. It's actually perfect. I planned it all in my head as I drove around, looking for the right tree and trying to figure out how I could angle the car on the side so I would snap right through the bone, because at least in that moment, I'd be in pain somewhere else. I just couldn't bear to hurt inside anymore. The phone ringing interrupted my plans. I saw it was my manager, who'd been calling me constantly since this whole thing blew up. I'd been ignoring him. Answer the phone now, or you're going to do something stupid, Sophie. That split second of logic, of rational thinking, was enough to snap me out of my blind mission to damage my body. I answered. Soph, where are you? Please drive home. It's going to be all right. I did what he asked, and when I got there, I sat in my driveway, clinging to my phone, and poured my heart out for 2 hours. I told him everything, and he just listened. He heard me. It's no surprise to me that this man is now my best friend in the world. He has been there for me in a way that no one else has, and if he didn't call me in that moment, I don't know what would have happened to me. If he hadn't made himself available to simply be there for me, I might not be here today. When I got inside, Jared was there with the kids. He stayed the night with me as a family, as I just couldn't be there alone without a friend. After Floss and Bobby had gone to sleep, Jared came back into the living room. Rarely an emotional person, his eyes were glossy. "You should not speak to her again," he said, standing over me, shaking his finger in my face like I was a high school girl in trouble. "Look at you." He was right. After what I'd just experienced, I realized I was done. I knew in that moment it was time to let go. I wasn't letting go because I didn't love her. It was because I did so much. Without saying a word, I went over to where I'd put the record player proudly on display, the dead, droopy flowers, symbolic of my soul, on a nearby table. I picked them both up, and the Lewis Capaldi record. I took them outside and threw them on the patio while I grabbed a hammer from the shelves near the barbecue. I swung the hammer over my head and brought it down with a ferocity I didn't know existed in me, meeting the pile of presents that lay haphazardly on the tiles with a huge crack. I smashed it all. Then I went around the house, gathering up every piece of her that remained in my space, every little thing she'd ever left behind. Undies, socks, a phone charger, t-shirts, every photo, every handwritten note she'd left me. She used to like leaving them behind in secret places for me to find when she'd return home. "I love you so much. You're the most beautiful girl in the world. Sophie Keisha, I really, really rate you. I promise I'll never stop loving you." These were things I thought I'd never throw away. But never underestimate the power of a backyard bonfire in a time of need. Saying a silent farewell as I lit a match, I watched as the flames burnt away the last pieces of our connection that I'd clung to so tightly. From that moment, I knew this was it. I needed to work on healing, not just for myself, but for my children. I booked an appointment to see my GP at 8 o'clock the next morning, and when I walked in, I simply said, "I need help." I told him what I had nearly done the night before, and he put me straight onto a very strong antidepressant, referring me to a psychiatrist for the next steps of my healing journey. I made a pact with myself to get better. I'd allowed myself to endure too much hurt for too long, and I was done. I couldn't let it go on any longer. Smashing and burning everything was incredibly cathartic, but I obviously wasn't healed after that. Far from it. But it was a moment of acceptance, at last, and a realization of just how important it was for my health that I let her go. It didn't matter if I still loved her. This wasn't healthy for me. I deserved to be happy. I had to learn to allow simplicity to replace complexity. I've spent a lot of time since then reflecting on myself and my behaviours, my part in the whole ordeal, and have realised just how different we are as people. I'm someone who needs to deal with things in order to process them. I need to speak about things, to cry, to put everything on the table. Whereas it seems to me that she disconnects. It's part of what makes her a successful athlete. Her ability to focus on one thing and shut out the rest. It is the most incredible trait for a sports person. She was able to move across the world, away from her family, away from her girlfriend, and shift focus to the job at hand. She wouldn't let anything distract her from her career, and good on her. I hope it brings longevity in her profession. But that way of being in the world was so foreign to me. It's just not how I work, especially when I'd gone from being with Jared, who worked so well with me and alongside me, even in difficult times. We could always come together to figure out a solution and to work how we were going to go about things, how we would move forward. We're still like that. We're on the same team. We help each other and we work through things together, just as a strong, united team should. With her departure, I felt like I had no control over my own life. I felt I had no say in how my time panned out, no say in how any of it was handled. I didn't get to make this decision that so deeply affected my life. It was a choice that was made for me. But like I said, we are just different people. While I want to talk things through, want to cry, want to take action, it seems that her way of coping was to disengage. I don't know whether that is actually true or just my perception, but the only thing that gives me some kind of peace is telling myself that she must have been struggling. She must have been hurting too, and simply did what she had to do to get through. That thought process allowed me to get some sleep at night in those early days and weeks after the big blow-up. My psychologist gave me an analogy that really resonated with me. She told me that some people, like myself, like to treat exes like a coffee table book. We leave them in the middle of our lounge room where we can always appreciate their beauty, a memory we can pick up and flick through whenever we feel like a browse. Other people need to take that book and lock it away in the filing cabinet as a way of processing. An out of sight, out of mind approach, unable to have it in front of their faces every day. Maybe she'll read this and do her classic eye roll, say that it's not the case at all, that I was way off the mark, that she just didn't love me anymore. That happens in life, it's just the way things are sometimes. But I need to hold on to the belief that it was her coping mechanism because it's the only way I can give myself peace and clarity around the situation. Otherwise, my nightmare becomes a hurtful reality. Moving on from her family was equally as heartbreaking for me. I felt like they, too, had become my family, like I've known them forever, and I could see vividly how my life would have played out as part of their united tribe. They had always been so welcoming, so accepting, and I felt a sense of belonging with them I'd never known before. I was mourning the loss of that future I had built in my mind, a future I would never have. It's probably not spoken about enough that when you break up with someone, you break up with their entire life as well. It's not uncommon for your lover's friends and family members to become as important to you as the partner themselves. Countless happy memories together, a shared pride in the person you share, connections on all sorts of meaningful levels. Sometimes saying goodbye to them is just as difficult as saying goodbye to your partner in the wake of a devastating relationship breakup. But holding on is also self-defeating and only serves as a painful reminder of what will never be. My focus had shifted to trying to stay afloat during Melbourne's longest stage 4 lockdown. Family were unable to visit. Nothing was open. I was homeschooling my two children every day, as well as managing their sense of loss for this person as best I could too. And I could only ever leave my house for 1 hour a day to go for a walk or to the supermarket. I had no escape from myself. I couldn't go out with my friends. I couldn't start a new hobby. I couldn't go to work. Every day was a painful soundtrack on repeat, while I was acutely aware that she seemed to be flourishing in a whole new environment. Exploring life in a new country with her teammates, going to training, she'd been thrown into an environment that allowed her to be distracted, worlds away from the stale, grey existence I was trapped in. Every day I had to sit there, alone in my thoughts, desperate to get away from them, to get out of my head. You need to learn to sit with your shit and stop running away from it. Blondie with the bun had said that to me once, after I'd brushed her aside yet again to return to my turbulent love. You never just sit with your shit, Soph. You keep escaping it. She'd been so right from the beginning, and I hadn't been able to see it this whole time. From someone who thought she was so self-aware, I'd been pretty damn great at pushing away feelings of discomfort and ignoring negative feelings that came up. It had been 6 months since Blondie and I had even spoken, yet she'd seen something in me back then that it took me to being dragged through utter emotional hell to realise for myself. Looking back, I believe it was all supposed to happen. Did it hurt like hell? Yes, it absolutely fucking did. But I believe the universe made me sit with my shit and confront a lot of the stuff I never had before. I was forced to learn to be on my own, to be okay with not speaking to anyone, to be fine not having sex, not having company. I used to always distract myself with things like that, but in a stage 4 lockdown, when karma bit me in the ass, I had no choice but to learn that life lesson. I was forced to sit with my shit, just like Blondie had said, and in doing so, I came to a place of enjoying my own company. I was okay on my own. In fact, I liked living by myself, just me and the kids. It had been a fucking brutal process, going to therapy and revisiting all of those suppressed moments, but I was so determined to get to a better headspace, and I did it. Something had truly flipped in me. I didn't feel that sadness anymore, and for the first time ever, I didn't want her back. I obviously still loved her, and I know a part of her will always be with me through life. But that intense yearning and desperation had moved on. I no longer felt like I needed her to make me something. I will never apologize for loving her too hard, for continually fighting for what I wanted, for fighting for the love I knew existed and the connection I yearned for so deeply. Who I will apologize to, though, is myself, for staying too long somewhere I knew I shouldn't be. Countless times in life, we are told to follow our heart in the merciless battle of head versus heart. Your heart will always know the way, we are told, and will take you to where you are supposed to end up. But what if that heart is shattered into 1,000 pieces? Then what? Which piece do we follow? What if, by following that heart, we destroy our brain, leaving no capacity for logical thinking when we need it the most? All you can do is forgive yourself for loving so freely and set yourself free from all the reasons it didn't work out the way you hoped. Chapter 22. There was one woman who had always been there for me when I needed her during my mental health struggles, who had always given me the time of day, although, like a coward, I had left her behind so thoughtlessly over and over again over the course of a year. For a long time, Blondie with the bun had been telling me she thought I needed to be on some form of medication, that she thought I would benefit from regularly seeing a psychologist. So, when I was finally brave enough to start taking prescription medication, I wanted to let her know. Even though we hadn't seen each other or been in contact, aside from a beautiful bunch of flowers she'd sent me for my 30th a month before, I felt she was someone who would support me and appreciate this huge step I'd taken. Somewhere inside, I also knew I owed it to her as a part of me taking ownership for my past actions. I sent her a text. I told her about the blow-up, about the birthday present. I told her about the tree incident, how badly I'd wanted to hurt myself. About the other random gift of a Louis Vuitton wallet that showed up at my door the month after my ex told me to never contact her again. I told her that I had now made the conscious choice to move on from this, that I couldn't allow myself to live like that anymore, and that I was getting help. I just want to let you know that I finally bit the bullet. I'm seeing a psychologist, I wrote, amongst other things. Not expecting a reply, but wanting to finally confess that she had been right all along and that I did need help. She replied, "At the end of the day, I want you healthy. I want you happy," she wrote back. No anger or resentment evident for what I'd put her through. "I'm so happy for you, but I also can't be a support person for you right now. I'm sorry." I completely understood. In fact, I was proud of her for putting that boundary in place and maybe even a little relieved. In the past, we would have ended up falling back together so quickly, so naturally, which I know wouldn't have been good or fair for either of us at that time. Another month or two went by and I slowly picked myself up and got my head back together. It wasn't fast or easy, but that healing was necessary. Going through treatment helped me look back on a lot of my actions and decipher what they meant and why I had acted in certain ways. I began to truly realize how badly I'd treated this amazing, kind woman and that in so many ways, I had been doing to someone else what I felt was being done to me. I had been so okay to just call it off when it suited me and then go back to her when I wanted validation. I was so critical of the pain I was in, yet thought nothing of disregarding this woman who had treated me with so much love and kindness. As I sat in the courtyard one day, sobbing with my head in my hands, I had an epiphany. Oh my God, I get it now. I now knew everything she went through, all because of me. I grabbed my phone, tears still running down my cheeks, and typed out a message. "I'm sorry for making you feel abandoned. I'm sorry I made you feel unimportant. I'm sorry if it looked like it was so easy for me to let go. I have felt that too, and I get it now. I know exactly what it feels like, and I wouldn't wish that sense of abandonment upon anybody. Because it was, to date, the most difficult life experience I'd endured. Now, I am a spiritual believer. I do believe in the power of fate and of the universe, and to this day I am certain that everything that had happened up until that point was divinely guided. Too many things that occurred simply could not be ignored. As shitty as it was, and though it was my toughest life experience, the reality is that I learnt a lot, and if I hadn't been through what I had, I would never have truly understood the sense of confusion and rejection that I put this poor girl through. As someone who had loved ferociously and accepted someone back into my life countless times, it was her that had always done the same thing for me. I didn't expect anything from her. I didn't once try to pursue her or ask her to take me back. It wasn't what I wanted, and even if I did, I'd come too far in my emotional development to risk hurting either her or myself again. I just needed her to know that I explicitly understood now what I'd done, the consequences of my actions, and that even if I never received an apology or acknowledgement myself, this girl deserved all of that from me. But fate wasn't through with us yet. The universe had much more in store. During that stage of lockdown in Melbourne, we weren't allowed to travel further than 5 kilometres from our homes, and with this girl living on the other side of town, nearly an hour away, there was no way we were going to see each other as long as this lockdown was in place. So, you can imagine my surprise when I heard through our mutual friends that she was moving just 2 suburbs away from where I was living, a 10-minute drive. She was living in a serviced unit in Brunswick with a couple of her teammates, they told me, in the same chain of apartments their team management always booked. And now that put her firmly inside my allowed radius. Surely we won't run into each other. I mean, 5 kilometres, it's close, but it's not that close. The universe then revealed the next part of its plan. I had been referred to a new psychologist whose practice was in Brunswick. It was on Sydney Road, which is a very long street packed with heaps of shops, cafes, restaurants, offices. Usually buzzing, it was quieter than usual with lockdown going on. I was driving along, looking for the right number, late again and frazzled. Some things never change. I found a park, fumbling with my keys, ready to jump out of the car, when I glanced up. Oh my God. This was the apartment building she had just moved into. I couldn't fucking believe it. Out of the whole suburb, on this 24-kilometre-long road, she was living right next door to the one psychologist's office I would be attending weekly. I couldn't believe it. You're really going to do this to me, universe? After my appointment, I popped into the Woolworths behind the practice to grab a couple of groceries, and the entire time I was inside, I couldn't stop thinking that this would be her supermarket. I had this overwhelming feeling that I would bump into her, reuniting in the bloody vegetable aisle or something. I was relieved when we didn't, but every week as I would head off to see my psychologist, the thought of her was again thrown in my face. And I couldn't help but feel the universe was trying to make us run into each other. We had always lived on complete opposite sides of the city, and then straight after the government brought in a 5-kilometre radius, she was suddenly moved inside that bubble. Not just in the bubble, but right next door to my psychologist's office. What were the odds? There was no way that was a coincidence. We did get back in touch with each other soon after that, though via text message, not some random meeting in Woolies. We hadn't seen each other in months, and while neither of us was itching to dive into a relationship, it was really nice to reconnect when we did. I instantly remembered how warm she was, how kind and sweet and funny, and it was so beautiful to have her back in my life, even if just as a friend. One night while we were texting, I joked, "So when are you going to invite me over to see the new apartment?" Mind you, I was in bed, in my PJs, nestled under the covers with Maccas, in no way angling for an invite. "Ha ha, never," she replied. We kept chatting, and as we were winding things down, I got a message that said, "Apartment 503. "Wait, is she for real? Are you serious?" I shot back. "If you don't come now, I'll change my mind." I was shocked. It was honestly the last thing I'd expected. I'd just been joking around. I sat there staring at my phone. Wait, is this a good idea? Is this the worst idea in the world? Do I even want to go? Yes. Yes, I did want to go, even though I didn't know why. I'd just had the shittiest few months. Maybe it would be good to just hang out with her and her housemate, who was there too, just to have company. I leapt out of bed, scattering Macca's fries all over the doona, threw on my trackies and raced over. We talked and talked until 4 a.m. We spoke about how hurt she'd been when I'd left her 6 months ago after weeks of back and forth with another woman. "How could you do that to me?" she asked at one point. "I just don't understand how you could bounce between us like that." I told her how sorry I was for the pain I'd caused her, but I also backed myself, reminding her that I'd maintained complete transparency with her during this time. You have every right to be upset by what I did. I take ownership of that and am remorseful for the pain I caused. But I won't let you criticise the way my brain works, I explained gently. We view situations differently. That's something I've really learnt about relationships, that while you might view certain behaviour as morally wrong, another person sees it in another light. So while those actions may have hurt you, and I apologise profusely for that, I've now learnt that you can't be judgmental of a person for their brain working differently. We are humans. We just aren't all wired the same. At the time, that's what I needed to do, I shrugged. You don't know what it's like to have been locked down in a 10-year relationship, to be a mom at 22, to be married and raising kids while other 20-somethings are out on adventures, dating, living their lives. So I am not apologising for that, for needing a little bit of time to explore and experiment. I hurt other people along the way. I even hurt myself with some of my actions. But I am sorry that you were hurt in that process. The fact was, I'd fallen in love with someone. She'd abruptly left me, and then I met someone else, and then the first person came back. Finding myself in such an indecisive position wasn't intentional on my part. We'd met at a time in my life that was riddled with confusion. I just couldn't do that to someone, she had said, anguish and accusation in her eyes over me having sexual relations with two people around the same time. I understand that, I said. But I am not you. They were tough conversations, the type of conversations I probably owed to her a lot earlier, if I'd had an adequate explanation to provide to her at the time. But these conversations were necessary so she could see the inner struggle I'd never really opened up to her about. I think she finally saw the woman in me who felt caged, tied down, and who felt like she wasn't living an authentic life. She finally understood the stress and the anxiety I'd been grappling with from the moment those first feelings of wanting to leave my marriage ever came into my head. How many people I felt like I was going to let down by leaving my husband, my family, my friends, above all, my children. I discussed with her the excruciating guilt that I still live with every day for separating from their dad, for breaking up the family. And I think she was able to see a completely different, more vulnerable side to me. It perhaps helped her to understand why I had to do some of the things I did. In my work with my psychologist and through self-reflection I'd done over several months, I had also realised that a lot of the appeal with the other woman had been in the sense of escape I found when I was with her. I did genuinely love her, but being able to jump on a plane and leave my life here for 5 days and go to a game or out for cocktails freely and spontaneously, go out for fancy dinners, go on real dates in the city where I didn't know anyone. That was so enticing and it was fulfilling a need that I hadn't met in a very long time, if ever. I'd felt so smothered in my life for years and thanks to a multitude of factors and what she seemed to offer was a chance to break free. It's not that I didn't love my children, of course I did, more than anything. But I was a woman who needed time on her own. She provided me with that. I'd been totally responsible from a very young age. I'd been a bloody good wife, with dinner on the table, looking after my man, his world, and everything to do with the kids. And the free spirit in me just needed to break away. Some people might go partying and take drugs in search of a thrill. Some might travel. But for me, it was dating someone who gave me the opportunity to unpin my mum badge and leave it behind for a while. Someone who let me just be Sophie. It was exciting. For the first time in over 6 years since having my son, I just felt like me. Hindsight has also taught me it wasn't ever going to be sustainable. I could only run away for so long. And then, while I was busy working to put myself back together again, not even looking for love, there was her. The one who had initially scared me because of how perfect she was for my future. The one I ran from because she offered everything I'd convinced myself I didn't want. The one who always welcomed me with open arms, with warmth and love. The one with the beautiful soul who would always listen who held space for my fears and faults, the one who would never hurt me. When we were first dating, in those very early days while I was still trading back and forth between the two women, I could so easily see our future together. I saw certainty and I saw commitment with her. I saw a comfortable, reassuring life together, and it scared the shit out of me. I was terrified that we would settle down quickly, too quickly, and that I would run again, like I did from my marriage. In a way, I feel like everything had to play out exactly the way it did, so that we could end up where we did, so I could learn to truly appreciate the value in that beautiful, calm existence. I'm sure there are people out there who think we only got back together because my ex left, but that simply wasn't the case. We didn't get back together instantly. There were a good 6 months there where I was single and doing my own healing. And even when we did reconnect, there was a lot of back and forth, a lot of time spent together debating if this was the right thing to do, if it's what we wanted. She actually had to go away for a couple of months, pretty much straight after we'd started speaking again. We probably only spent a week together before she had to go up to Queensland, and when she left, we had absolutely no idea what was going to happen. We barely even talked about it, allowing the universe to let things play out naturally. We were both really aware that we'd only been back in touch for a week or so. It was a long time that she'd be gone, and we'd just touch base again when she got back. But neither of us could ignore the magnetism between us, the kind that had always been evident. After those excruciating few months following my breakup, it was her that reminded me all over again what happiness felt like. When the borders opened up again around mid-December 2020, I took a flight to Queensland the next day. We weren't even officially back together, but Melbourne had been in a lockdown for nearly 6 months at that stage, and now I could finally jump on a plane and go to Queensland to watch her play. I was absolutely going to be there. I couldn't wait to see her again. I'd had time on my own, and whilst we were still in conversation, I just felt so at peace with the situation. I'd handed over the reins to her completely, allowing her to choose the next move as she was the one whose feelings had always been impacted. Fear showed up before I could fully commit to being there. Was travelling to visit her while still unsure of my feelings the smartest of moves to make? So I talked to Jared about it, and as always, he knew what to say. I don't know if I should go because I don't know how I feel about her yet, and I don't want to give her the wrong impression, I told him. And I'd been very honest with her about that too. She felt the same way. She didn't want to dive straight in as she was still dealing with a lot from our past too. Soph, are you happy right now? Jared asked me outright. Does she make you smile? Do you feel good? Yes, yes, and yes. If she does, then go. You have been through so much in the past 12 months. I've seen you at rock bottom. So if you have a chance now to go and smile and laugh and have a good time, to go out for dinner, go watch some basketball and have fun, just fucking go. He was right. I did deserve to be happy, and I deserved to hang out with people that made me feel that way. Too long, the Sophie in my previous life had ignored the signs when hanging around the wrong type of people, and I'd made a promise to myself to pay attention to those who simply made me feel good, who made life fun, who I enjoyed myself around, who made me laugh, and who added positive value to my life. So I went. I visited her a few times in December, and she even invited me to bring the kids along once, a contrast to what I'd previously known. Something always so important to me, having my children so warmly accepted with open arms. When she came back to Melbourne just before Christmas, we naturally and so easily fell into this beautiful rhythm of life together. I found myself at the kitchen bench one morning, washing the brekkie dishes and thinking about how we hadn't argued in a few weeks. Why did it feel strange? Oh my God. This is normal. I was so surprised by the feeling of peace and calm, And I realized I'd become so used to the tension, angst, and fighting in relationships that I thought it was the norm. But this was good. Like, really good. I'd been running from this idea of normal for so long, but after the ups and downs I had been through over the past year, I realized that normal was exactly what I needed. Normal had scared me for so long. I feared that if I found normal again, I'd run like I had so many times in the past. But normal no longer needed to be frightening. Coming home on a weeknight to sit on the couch and watch TV with a cup of tea next to someone I loved, that's all I wanted to do. I'd come full circle in the realization that I was ready for that peace, that calm, and that stability in my life. Everything I truly wanted was in her. Chapter 23. My girlfriend and I are living the most beautiful life together. Well, actually, she's not my girlfriend anymore. She's my fiance. But we've certainly both had to make some adjustments along the way. For one thing, apart from those 5 or so weeks with my ex, I've never lived with anyone except Jared. And for her, living with and essentially parenting children was a big step. She's obviously amazing with the kids, but there's a big difference between being good with them and living with them, whilst also trying to get what we both want out of a relationship. I remember her telling me early into living together, in the middle of the day one time, that she was tired, so she was going to have a nap. "What do you mean?" I asked, shocked and, to be honest, a little bit horrified. "You don't nap in the middle of the day when you've got kids at home. I haven't napped in 7 years. She'd lived on her own, on and off, for 7 years, so of course it seemed perfectly reasonable to go and have a little sleep in the middle of the day if she felt like it. But for me, as a mum of 2 young kids, I laughed at the idea. Who was she kidding? Things like this are funny to look back on, because we certainly had to adjust to each other, and I had to remind myself that, even though she was incredible with Bobby and Floss, it was very new to her. Often I had to just breathe and remind myself that this was just as much of an adjustment for her as it was for me, someone who'd spent a long time on her own running her household as she wished. Not that I needed her to mother my children, but my boundaries were now set very firmly, that if she was to come into their home, she would come into their lives and every aspect that encompassed. And that responsibility was something that she needed to be aware that she was signing up for as she signed up to me again. When my ex had left, my children were devastated, especially Bobby. My son was asking where she was, why she didn't FaceTime them before bed anymore. How does a parent answer questions like that? I was destroyed at being left by someone I loved so dearly, but as a mother, I had my children's sadness and confusion to face up to as my first priority. And to be fair, it was probably my mistake in allowing her to become so deeply enmeshed in their lives. I can't put that blame on her, but regardless, I couldn't let it happen again. So, when Blondie and I were in talks of getting back together, I made it very clear from the outset that this was a deal breaker and that I could no longer involve my children in another blurred boundary of commitment. "If you are in, you are all in," I told her. "There's no half in, half out. If we're doing this, you're in, and we are a family. My children deserve stability." I knew that by committing to her, I was committing my kids to her as well. But I was also laying down the law for myself. There would be no coming in and out again, no questions around whether I was sure or not. I knew that if I was going to do this, I was doing it properly, for her sake, for my sake, and for my children's sake. So I made that commitment to her, as she did to me, and here we are, living a wonderful life as a big modern family. To be brutally honest, the idea of giving someone something like a ring to symbolise love or equate to a relationship status makes me feel a little uneasy. Another tradition that for so long we have been told is what we have to do, and I didn't realise how I felt about it until after my separation with Jared. I did face a moral dilemma, however, upon my discussions with Maddie. It wasn't fair for me to take that moment away from her, something that was important to her and that she wanted out of life, just because I had done it before and my feelings surrounding it had changed. That's part of growing together as a couple and compromising in a relationship. Just because it didn't matter to me, it was significant for my partner, and therefore that now meant it was important to me too. Proposing to her, just us two, in the bedroom of our new home, renovations still in the process, and telling her how much I couldn't wait to grow our own family memories here one day was such a beautiful moment. She had taken on so much coming into a relationship with children, a life in which it's difficult to have your own time. She deserved her moment, her big moment in life she'd always dreamed of. And in that point in time, I knew I was making the exact right decision. Our relationship has the usual ebbs and flows of life, many things we're still working on daily. A focus of mine now when approaching relationship is to look at the bigger picture and not to be so focused on the bad, but instead the many good parts of life together. My approach to perspective and how it's you that chooses how you're going to view a situation has honestly changed my life. Your perspective is your version of reality. So by continually and consciously choosing to focus on what's bad or what doesn't work within your own dynamic, you're creating a very dark, dim reality for yourself to live out. Like any relationship, I could quickly list you 5 things that she does that shits me to tears. But I also don't have to look far to know all the things she gives me. With her, it's never been about anything but her. I live a pretty cool life. I have impressive work and career experiences. I can travel when and where I like. I earn a lucrative income and I have many assets to my name. I don't need material things from her, nor do I want them from her. Her greatest gift to me is when she is simply herself, the easygoing, nurturing country girl that everyone loves. I call her my calm because she has absolutely taught me what it is like to be calm and centered in my life. When everything else is go, 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 she makes chilling on the couch in PJs my most favourite experience. She allowed my life to become soothing and assured. And never once have I questioned where I stood with her. While we ummed and ahed about whether we should get back together or not, when we did, I was so peaceful, in a blissful bubble of appreciation and acceptance. But it wasn't just her that made me happy again. I'd finally come to a place where I was at peace with myself as well. If we'd gotten back together in August, as soon as my ex had left the country, it would have been all for the wrong reasons. It would have been because I needed that validation, a top-up for my ego, but I had to learn to be alone and to be okay with it. And I had to go through those really intense emotions alone. I was scared of hurting her again, though. And in all transparency, part of me still is. I think I will live with the fear of hurting people forever. Where I am currently at, I believe I will live with that fear of commitment forever, a sign of how tough the amicable separation with Jared was on me. When I married that man, I promised forever because I believed forever. And the speed with which that unraveled around me has left a piece of my heart locked away that I'm not sure I'll ever be able to give to anyone ever again. I acted in ways to protect myself, but I refused to live in fear, which would ultimately mean denying myself a life of fulfillment and experience. No relationship is ever guaranteed, but accepting that we cannot control the uncontrollable allowed me to move towards her again. I approach life now with an empowering sense of realism, flexible to the ups and downs, fluid in the face of disappointments that may come along, accepting that they are all part of life and further shaping who we are. Welcoming relationships when they come and allowing them to go when they've run their course, never taking away from the role and importance that a person has played in your story. Accepting that we're happy now, we're enjoying life together. And whatever happens in the future, we will face it. Life is good. The baby question comes up a lot for me too, and to be honest, it fucking scares me. for many of the same reasons that having a baby should have probably scared me at 22, had I not been naive, madly in love, and desperate to become a mother. At the time of writing this book, I'm suffering yet another internal battle, an intense, paralyzing fear, and the fact that I'm actually desperate to have another baby. But what if we were to break up again one day, and then I've got kids with two broken families? That thought frightens me to my core.